All right, here we go. Starting for real this time. The title is 10 Fresh Ideas for Your Seder. I'm not sure if we're going to get to all 10 ideas, but we will definitely walk away with Hashem's help with some new ideas to share at your Seder this year. The first idea that I'd like to begin with is Halach Ma'anya. That's the statement that we make when we invite everybody to our Seder to join along with us as we recall the Exodus from Egypt. So I'm not going to share with you any particular idea related to the text of the Halach Ma'anya, but this is just by way of a general introduction. Well, why is it that we begin the Seder by inviting people to join us? So the simple answer is because that's what we do as Jews. We invite people to join us at our meals. And that's absolutely correct. The Rambam talks about the fact that if a person has a Yom Tov meal, but chooses deliberately not to have anyone else there except for their family, so that's not truly a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov. Rather, it's simply a joy for their stomach. That's the language that he uses. It's a very harsh idea. So we're always looking to invite people, because as Jews, we understand that true celebration includes reaching out to others. But of course, if that's the only reason why we start with Halach Ma'anya and we open up our homes to people, so it's a little bit strange, because we should be saying a version of Halach Ma'anya on Sukkot and on Shavuos too. Meaning if the whole point of the Halach Ma'anya is just simply inviting others to join our Yom Tov table, so why is it unique to Pesach? We should have some sort of Halach Ma'anya version for Sukkot and for Shavuos. In fact, it might be more enticing to invite people for real bread and a real meal rather than the Seder, which has the matzah, and we don't end up serving the food for an hour or two into the meal itself. So I think that there's something deeper taking place for the Halach Ma'anya than simply an invitation to join in the food. Rabbi Soloveitchik has a beautiful insight. He says as follows, that the purpose of inviting people to our Seder is not simply to provide for them physical food. Rather, the purpose of Halach Ma'anya is a statement that says, we are open to learning from others. We invite you to join our Seder experience so that you can enrich the experience for us all. A Jew understands that there is something to learn from others as well. So we make this statement uniquely on Pesach, not simply because we want to provide the physical delights to the others who might not have, but more profoundly because we are expressing our willingness to learn from other people and their perspectives. And that's the essence of the Halach Ma'anya. This idea was already modeled by our forefather Abraham. We know that Eliezer goes to look for a shidduch for Avraham's son, for Yitzchak. And one of the questions that Eliezer asks Rivka is as follows. If you look on the source sheet, right below where I write inside of Rabbi Soloveitchik, so I just have a little excerpt of the pasuk. Eliezer says to Rivka, "Hayesh beis avich makom lanu lalin." Is there a place for us lodging in your father's house? And the Rav understands, as perhaps only Rabbi Soloveitchik can do, that the inquiry of Eliezer was far beyond a physical inquiry, like is there a bed available? Look at what the Rav writes. I have it in the box over here. That Eliezer was really inquiring the following. Is there room in your father's house for the messenger of Abraham who brings a new faith, a new ethic, a new morality? Are you aristocrats of Haran so proud that you do not wish to give ear to the poor Meshulach from the land of Canaan? Meaning Eliezer was inquiring, are you closed-minded or are you open-minded? Hayesh beis avich makom lanu lalin, is there place for lodging in your father's house, was not a inquiry into literally the size of the home, but it was an inquiry, have you been brought up in a home that gives space to others, that considers other people's perspectives on life and takes that into account. That was the question that Eliezer was asking Rebecca, because Eliezer understood, if you're going to be a good fit for my master's son, you have to have that perspective that there is space, mental space, right? Intellectual space to learn from others. And that's the idea that we start off with the Halach Ma'anya. We invite people to join our Seder because we express the idea that we are not perfect. We don't have a monopoly on all good ideas. And your perspectives will enrich our Seder. And I thought that that could perhaps explain a statement that we make a little bit further on in the Haggadah, in the passage, in the paragraph of Avadim Hayinu. In that paragraph, we say something that's sort of puzzling that we might come back to. We'll see how the shir flows. But in the midst of that paragraph, we say, Va'afilu kulanu chachamim, even if we were all wise, kulanu nevonim, we all had real understanding, kulanu zikenim, even if we were all elderly, kulanu yodim es haTorah, even if we all knew the entire Torah, mitzvah alein l'saper b'yitzias Mitzrayim, we would still have an obligation to recall the exodus from Egypt. So it's a little bit funny. Obviously, everybody has a mitzvah to recall the exodus. Why do we say, even if we were wise, even if we were all intellectuals, even if we all knew the Torah, we'd still have an obligation to recall the Exodus? It's obvious. That doesn't obviate you from your mitzvah. So perhaps the answer alludes to this very idea that a Jew understands, as a chacham as we may be, as a navon as we may be, as much as we may know the entirety of the Torah, we still have an obligation to recall the Exodus, because we will learn new ideas from each other as we go through this experience. And no Jew is perfect, and every Jew has something to learn. So, Jeff.
It's not just the Exodus, but it's all aspects of the Exodus.
Absolutely. Which is exactly. Exactly. So I think that that's a very profound way of starting our Seder experience by speaking about the value added by everyone else. Shandy.
Also, the Halach Ma'anya, by inviting everyone, we learned from Lot that he was saved, because the only thing he kept in stone,
right,
was Hachnasas Orchid.
Interesting.
And because of that, because he remembered that very from nice. Abraham, that he
and was... Interesting. Was and maybe you could suggest that the Hachnasas Orchid was not limited just to the physical dimension of opening your home and giving somebody a plate to eat, but not to literally eat the plate. That wouldn't be very hospitable at all. But giving them some food to eat. But the concept of, yes, there is always more space for others, and there's always something to learn from somebody else's perspective. And Lot understood that. That's a very, very nice idea. Beautiful. Okay, so that's what I wanted to share with you in terms of the Halach Ma'anya. I'd like to turn now to that paragraph that I just referenced, the Avadim Hayinu paragraph, where we do the Manishtana. And after we do the Manishtana, we have this paragraph where we talk about the fact that we were all slaves in Egypt to Paro, and now Hashem has taken us out. That's probably the simplest answer to the Manishtana, right? That the Manishtana is all about what's doing tonight, why we have all of these peculiar actions that we do in terms of leaning and eating this vegetable and eating the matzah, so on and so forth. So the Avadim Hayinu is the general answer, and that general answer is that tonight is a night where we go from slaves to being free. So all of the peculiar actions that you are taking note of, my child, are reflected in that general shift that takes place tonight, where we go from being a slave to now being a free man. In fact, they point out that the Manishtana is really one general question, that the night is fraught with inconsistencies, right? We'll look at the Manishtana for a moment as I'm mentioning it. They point out that the Manishtana can really be distilled down to this one general idea, which is, what's going on tonight? Are we acting like free people, or are we acting like slaves? Because on the one hand, we're eating matzah, which is poor man's bread. And on similarly, we're also eating maror, which is bitter. It reflects slavery and our difficult experiences. On the other hand, we are dipping, which was a sign of aristocracy. That was the fancy way to eat back in the times of Chazal. And we're also leaning, which also reflects a certain elegance and aristocracy. So which is it? Are we stuck in freedom? Are we stuck in slavery? Are we free? So the general answer is, Avadim hayinu lefaro v'mitzrayim. We were slaves to Paro, but vayotzeinu Hashem lokeinu misham, and Hashem took us out tonight. So tonight is a night of transition. So that's why we do some actions that reflect slavery, but we also do items and actions that reflect the freedom. Okay, so that's the Manishtana and the Avadim Hayinu. But I'd like to zero in the language that we use in the Avadim Hayinu, where we speak about Hashem taking us out, Biyad Chazaka Uvizroa Netuya, with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. So the truth is, the concept of a mighty hand is a little bit superfluous. The bottom line is that Hashem took us out. What's added by the mighty hand? The paragraph could have simply read, Avadim ayinu lefaro b'mitzrayim, vayotzinu Hashem lokinu misham, and God took us out. What is the imagery of the mighty hand, biyad chazaka? What does that add to the conversation? So I'd like to share with you two ideas that relate to this point. The first idea comes from Rav Yosef Tzvi Salant, one of the great sages of Yerushalayim before the state was founded. He lived 100 years or so prior to that, if I'm not mistaken. So Rav Yosef Tzvi Salant writes as follows, that God operates the world with certain rules. The most overarching is called nature. God operates within nature. And this idea is reflected in something that we say in the Kiddush Levana, Chok Uzman Nasan Lahem, that God has given rules and a timing to the natural world, Shelo Yishanu as Tafkidam, and they can't change their jobs, meaning that the sun always rises in the east and sets in the west. I mean, even though we know that the sun really doesn't move and we move, but conceptually, or I should say the perception-wise, we see or we feel like the sun rises and the sun sets. And we know that the moon waxes and wanes. There are rules to the natural world. And God has told the natural world that it cannot change. Yet every once in a while, God does change nature. God does use a strong arm, if you will, a yad hachazaka, to override and change the natural world. And that's what's referenced in this phrase, Yad HaChazaka, God's strong arm, in the sense that God has taken the rules of nature and thrown them to the side, and has now intervened in a supernatural way. And the Exodus from Egypt, in all of its glory, is really a supernatural Exodus, where God has intervened on a supernatural level. So that's what we're referencing when we say, Yad Chazaka, God used a strong hand, because God has intervened and gone against the general rules of nature. And because God has done all of these, Rav Yosef Tzvi Salant calls items, he goes through all of these, God has all of these actions that God does that are supernatural, so we too have to do noticeably different actions on the night of the Seder. So God did things which were noticeably different out of the realm of the normal natural world, so we too respond with items that are unnatural, if you will, or out of the norm, to remind us how God acted out of the norm. So that's the answer. The Manishtana is all about, no, Tate, what are we doing all of these abnormal activities? We don't usually dip multiple times and lean and this and that and matzah. The answer is, yeah, but God did stuff that was abnormal also, supernatural, Yad Chazaka. So we too respond with these abnormal is perhaps not the greatest word, but they're unusual actions that we do on the night of the Seder remind us of God's unusual intervention overriding the natural world. And that is embedded in the term Yad Chazaka, according to Rav Yosef Tzvi Salant. I saw a different idea in the Haggadah of the Masa Nisim, which is Rav Yaakov Lorberbaum. And he has a very nice understanding regarding Yad Chazaka. What's the significance of this strong hand? So he notes that God could have taken us out from Egypt in a more subtle, subdued way. He didn't have to necessarily make waves, a pun somewhat intended in terms of the crossing of the sea. Jeff, it's not so bad, right? Making waves? Okay, good. Right? So God doesn't necessarily have to make waves to take us out. He could have taken us out in a much more subtle fashion. We would have achieved the same goal. But God didn't want to do that. God took us out biyad chazaka, with a strong hand, in the sense that this created ripple effects for the entire world. The whole world heard about this exodus from Egypt. And we know that because Yisro comes, he hears what happened in Egypt. And we know that Amalek comes to fight us because they heard what happened. So literally this supernatural exodus created a ripple effect throughout the entire world. And everyone knew about it. And that came to help us. Oh, there, exactly. Very good. So that came to help us at a critical moment in Jewish history just a little while later. A little while later, the Jewish people ultimately sinned with the golden calf, correct? And God wanted to destroy the world. And Moshe comes to our rescue with a very compelling argument. Look with me, I'm sorry I didn't put numbers on the sources, but where it says idea number 3 from the Masa Nisim, look at the language that Moshe uses when he's trying to walk God away from the idea of destroying the entire nation. Look at what Moshe says. Lama yomru Mitzrayim le'mor, bira'ahu tzi'am laharog osam beharim ulachal osam me'al p'nei ha'dama, shuv mi'charon ha'pecha v'inachem al hara le'amecha. Why should the Egyptians say he brought them out with evil intent to kill them in the mountains and to annihilate them from upon the face of the earth? Retreat from the heat of your anger and reconsider the evil intended for your people. In other words, Moshe says to Hashem as follows: God, everybody heard that you took the Jewish people out of Egypt. If you go ahead and kill everybody right here, everybody will say, oh, you know what? God took the Jewish people out to kill them in the desert. That was it. God didn't have the capability of bringing them into the land of Israel. So you have to retreat from your anger. You have to reconsider the punishment. And ultimately, you have to let the Jewish people enter the land of Israel. Because if not, it will be a gigantic desecration of God's name. In other words, the Masa Nisim says as follows. It is precisely because God took us out, biyad hachazaka, with a strong arm, that everybody knew about it. That's why it made the stakes so high, God. If you destroy the people, everyone will know that you couldn't bring them into the land of Israel. It will be a gigantic desecration of God's name. And therefore, God, you have to forgive the Jewish people. And you have to take them into the land of Israel. Because if you don't, everyone's going to know about it. In other words, the Yad HaChazakah, the fact that God took us out with an outstretched arm, ultimately planted the seeds for Moshe to come up with this argument that saved the Jewish people. Does everyone understand? Right? So that's the significance of the Yad HaChazakah. Had God taken us out in a more subtle way, without Yad HaChazakah, yes, the short-term goal would have been achieved. We would have been freed. But then when we sinned later on, there would have been no stopping God from just simply destroying us in the desert. It's because everybody heard about it, because it was done, biyad chazakah, that Moshe was able to make this argument to God and save us all of those months later from complete and utter destruction. So I thought that was a very nice idea from the Masa Nisim from Rav Yaakov Lorberbaum. Yeah, please, Jeff.
But you also have to include that God really knew that he had set this up. He was not going to go, he was not going to destroy this nation. Otherwise, you would have Moshe changing God's mind.
Right.
God's pure, God's perfect.
That's correct.
All of a sudden,
that's
humanity
correct. So the truth is, if you look in the Masa Nisim, he talks about the fact that God knew that we were going to sin. And God takes us out. No, no, just one second. God knew we were going to sin. And God takes us out with this outstretched arm and this great hand, specifically to plant the seeds for Moshe, so that he would have a way to daven, an effective way to daven, to entreat the Almighty, so that God does not destroy us fully when we sin. So it was all part of God's plan from the outset. So those are two ideas that you can share with
which
the part.
Reinforces Moshe as the leader of the Jewish
yes,
people.
Yes, absolutely, for sure. So those are two ideas you can share on that phrase, Yad Chazaka. What is the necessity of a strong hand? God could have done so in a more subtle way. You can choose to share the insight from Rav Yosef Tzvi Salant that God going out of the norms of nature, that's the Yad Chazaka. That's why we go out of our norms also. Or you can share the Ma'aseh Nisim, the idea that the Yad Chazaka planted the seeds that will ultimately save the people a little bit later on. Okay, now I'd like to share with you a beautiful insight from the Meshech Chachma from Rav Meir Simcha Midvinsk. The exact words that he's focusing on actually are the words from the Russia that we will speak about a little bit further on in the Haggadah, but I think this his idea that he presents is more global. You don't have to wait to the part of the Haggadah that deals with the Russia in order to share it. The Meshech Chachma is just generally going to make a beautiful insight regarding the importance of perpetuating the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. You'll see what I mean in just a moment. So let's start by looking at the Psukim in idea number 4. This comes at the very end of Parshas Bo. The Torah tells us that a time will come when we'll be in the land of Israel, and we will have to share the story regarding this exodus from Egypt. So the Torah tells us, V'haya ki v'yacha Hashem el eretz haknani, v'achiti, v'hamori, v'achivi, v'yivusi. And it will be that Hashem will bring us to the land of the Canaanites, and we list the other nations that live in the land of Israel as well. Asher nishpa l'avosecha l'aseis lach, that God has sworn to give to us, eretz zavas chalav u'devash, it will be a land flowing with milk and honey. And we will do this service in this month. In other words, when we get to the land of Israel, we'll all bring the Korban Pesach and we'll all celebrate the holiday of Passover. Three psukim later, the Torah tells us, and we will tell our children on that day, saying, because of this, God took us out of Mitzrayim. So the truch is, the beginning part of Pasuk Ches, that's actually the language that we supply for the She'ino De'elishol, right? The God told Bincha, we proactively share with the child, but then the second half of the Pasuk, Ba'avor Ze Asah Hashem Li, God did this for me and not you, that's the answer that we give to the Rasha. So the Pasuk is actually split. But let's just look at what the Meshech Chachma says regarding why it's so important to celebrate Passover when we enter into the land of Israel. Listen to what the Meshech Chachma writes. Al Derech Tzachus Yesh Lefarish. So for the sake of clarity, we can have the following interpretation. The following mashal, it's a parable. Le'echad shehisi bito le'elem ba'adei adayim. A man who marries off his daughter to a young man with a great pomp and circumstances. Bedira noe v'kol machasura v'alav. Essentially, machasura v'alav. Basically, a man marries off his daughter. He pays lots of money for her to have a beautiful wedding, and he pays for her to have a beautiful apartment, and all of the things that she needs, he provides. So the father is a very generous fella. V'simcha ishto im habas, the man's wife is exceedingly happy for her daughter. Kibita matza'a menucha beis isha, the mom feels so wonderful that her daughter has finally found a wonderful husband, and she's elated. Vayomer la bala, but the husband says to his wife, Lochein, I'm not so thrilled. Ki ma ye'aseha ben ata sheyechatel ishto, You know, basically, what has the son done? What has our new son-in-law done to prove himself for our daughter? Meaning, you're so happy. I'm happy too that she's ecstatic about her future. But ultimately, you know, let's see what happens. So I just spent a lot of money to make a wedding. I just spent a lot of money to buy them a beautiful apartment. It's all good. It's all fine and dandy. What happens tomorrow? Let's see if our new son-in-law can prove himself. Emasai ani roe ki amali haya litoeles. When will I know that all of my work preparing the wedding and paying for the apartment and so on will really be helpful and will ultimately pay off? Ubiti matza ohev ne'eman. When will I know that my daughter has truly found a beloved, committed husband? Ki da'eg leparnasa sar. When he starts being nervous about providing for her, ubinafsho yavi lachma, and with his soul he brings her bread, which is a figurative way of speaking. If he really works hard and puts his whole kishkas into supporting my daughter, our daughter, so then I'll know that this all of the expenses and all of the work that we have put into making this wedding, only later on will I know if it was really worthwhile. As only later on, avin ki kedai haya amali alav. Only later on will I really be sure that all of the work that I have put into this wedding was really worthwhile. So I see some people sort of nodding. You know, when you marry off a child, it's all fine and dandy. But the truth is, the real work starts when Shavuot Brachos are over, when it's now your son-in-law's responsibility to earn the big bucks and make sure your daughter is cared for. That's when you really will be able to understand if it was worth it or if it was, God forbid, not. So the Meshech Chachma continues on the top of the next page. Ki af ki nitzdavu Yisrael tekef et Pesach uv'matzah. Yes, it's true, the Jewish people were initially commanded to bring the Korban Pesach in Egypt and to eat matzah. Ein ze ikar hatachlis asher yishmeru es mitzvos Hashem yisbarach. That's not the ultimate purpose for the Jewish people, to see if they could, if they are committed to God. Be'od hema nasu'im al kanfei nisharim u'misuvavim be'amud anan. You know, during the Shev Brachos period, when God has is carrying them on his proverbial wings and is providing for them, sort of babying them in the cloud of glory, ve'ochle man, they're eating the man, ve'shosim mei be'er, and they're drinking from the well. You know, the fact that the Jewish people follow God under such circumstances is not particularly impressive, because God is babying them. God is providing for all that they need. It's not difficult under those circumstances to be committed to the Almighty. So the Meshech Chachma says that's why the psukim that we started reading just a few moments ago, that's why the psukim talk about a time when they'll enter the land of Israel, they'll be busy working, there's no longer going to be the man, there's no longer going to be the well, are they still able to observe the holiday of Passover? That's when we'll really be able to identify the commitment. That will be the litmus test. Let me just finish reading the Meshech Chachma. Rak, I'm on now the second page in the third line. Kashir yavo el aretz. When the people come to the land, uvachodesh hazeh, in this month. What's the significance of this month? So you tell me, what happens in the month of Nisan? The month of Nisan is when we start harvesting, when we start doing, you know, collecting all of the produce that has now grown, you know, during the rainy winter season. Now we're busy. Es HaKatzir, it's the time for harvesting. Tishmor et HaChag HaZeh, are we still able to sort of put down our sickle and pick up the matzah? Are we able to put aside all of our earthly pursuits and spend time thinking about God? In that month, Tishmor et HaChag HaZeh, are we still able to observe the holiday of Pesach? Az tireh, then we will see ki kedai hayu hanisim vaniflos asher asisi beitz hotzi osach mimitzrayim. Then I'll be able to really identify all of the work that I have done to take the people out. Was it really worth it? So God is like the father that's sort of hedging his bets. He's hopeful. He's hopeful that his son-in-law will ultimately be up to snuff and meet the challenges of the real world, but the Father doesn't know 100%. So obviously God knows the future, but God speaks to us with a hopefulness that I'm hopeful that you will show me that you can be committed. Right now, the Passover that you have that you are currently observing is very nice, but that's not really the litmus test. And that's why, specifically in Mitzrayim, when we were doing the Korban Pesach and we're doing everything right, God speaks about a time in the future. Let me see what happens when the challenges are much more significant. V'haya, I'm just going back to the Psukim. V'haya kivyacha Hashem al aret, and it will be when God brings you to the land. V'avadata savoda hazeh b'chodesh hazeh, and you do this service in this month. When you feel the burden of going to the field and making sure everything is okay and the harvest is coming along, are you able to put down your sickle and pick up your matzah? That will be the test. And that's why Pasuk Ches says, it's at that point, v'higadeta lebincha bayom ahu leimor. It's at that point when it'll be critical to share the story of the Exodus. The Exodus is not fully meaningful right now. It will only fully be meaningful at a later point in time. Let's look at the last paragraph for this idea. V'zeh ba'avur zeh. It's specifically this. Sha'ata amal v'zoreya v'kotzer. It's specifically at this time when you're busy, you're planting, you're harvesting, and nonetheless, you can observe the statutes of the Almighty. Asa li Hashem b'tzesi mimitzrayim. That's why God ultimately took us out. And this is a beautiful, really a remarkable insight into the Psukim. You have to tell your children, ba'avur zeh, it's for this moment in time, many years later, asa Hashem li b'tzesi mitzrayim, that God took us out from Egypt all that time ago. It's only now that we can prove to our father that we are truly a worthy son-in-law, right? Going back to that mashal. It's because now I'm working hard and I'm still able to observe the statutes and I'm still able to make Pesach. The Meshech Chachma says that really what's being alluded to over here is even further. It's specifically referring to a time when we are punished for observing the Torah. Not punished by God, but if we are persecuted, really, by the Gentiles for keeping God's mitzvos. The Ein Lifnei Pesach. And it could be a time when we don't have the opportunity to offer the Korban Pesach. Rak matzah umaru levad. Sometimes all we have, as this year, unless things change rapidly over the next couple of days, but a year like this year, we only have matzah and maror. Veheim shomrim mishmeres Hashem yisbarach, but nonetheless, we still remain committed to God. Ba'avur zeh, remember, we're going to say this in the Haggadah. Lo amarti ela b'sha shematzah umaror munachin lefanecha. Ba'avur zeh means we have to keep the halachos of Pesach even when all we have in front of us is the matzah and the maror. Meaning times are not so great. We don't have the Korban Pesach. But because of this, because of the matzah and the maror, we remain committed to God even if things are not perfect, even if we are persecuted. V'lo Pesach, shem begalos, we're in the exile, bizman shem Pesach. Nonetheless, we're still able to remain committed to God. That's exactly why God took us out. So that rabbinic dictum that ba'avur zeh lo amarti ela b'sha matza umarur munachin lefanecha, that we have to fulfill the mitzvos at a time when the matza and the maror is placed before us, is not simply a halachic statement, but it is a hashkafic statement. It is a theological statement that God took us out for times when we only had the matza and maror. When we were not able to observe all the halachos perfectly because we're in the exile, we don't have the Korban Pesach, if we're still able to have the matzah maror and to keep Pesach, that's why Hashem ultimately took us out. That's the ba'avur zeh asali, ba'avur zeh asa Hashem li b'tzeis Mitzrayim. That's ultimately that God took us out of Mitzrayim. So I think that's a really beautiful idea. You might not want to share all of the text because it's a little intricate, the text itself, but you can share with people the general idea that we focus on the Exodus of Egypt year in and year out, because that's when we show our true colors. The first year, when we were in Egypt and everything was going nicely, that really wasn't such a big deal. That wasn't so exciting. I mean, it was exciting at the moment, but that wasn't the real litmus test. The real litmus test comes years later when we're in less than ideal conditions and we're still able to observe the laws of Pesach. A very, very profound idea from the Meshech Chachma. I'm just thinking out loud that this seems to work very nicely with the general approach of Chazal, that we only offer the Korban Pesach one time when we were in the desert. We didn't offer the Korban Pesach each and every year when we were sojourning through the desert. So maybe in light of the Meshech Chachma, we could suggest that the desert was such a isolated, and it wasn't the real world. That's what I'm trying to say. It wasn't the real world experience. It was a supernatural existence that didn't reflect the reality of the world that we were going to be thrust into. So if the whole point of the Pesach is to show God our true colors, so in the desert, those weren't our true colors. We were still being sustained by the man and the be'er and the well. So God says, I don't need your Pesach at that point. It doesn't show me anything. Wait until you enter the land and then observe the laws of Passover. That's where your true colors will shine. Okay, I hope you enjoyed that idea as much as I did. I thought that that was really fantastic. After the paragraph of the Avadim Hayinu, that we say, we turn to a very interesting paragraph regarding a number of great rabbis that were all sitting together. We say, Maaseb, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azari, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, you had these great Tanoim, Shahayim Mesubim, Bnei Brak. They were all Haredi and living in Bnei Brak. Okay, I say that tongue-in-cheek. Bnei Brak didn't have the same makeup as it does today. They were talking about the Exodus the whole night long. Until the students came and they said to their masters, Rabboseinu, our teachers, Higiyaz Man Kriyat Shema Shel Shachris. So there are a number of interesting insights that you can share regarding this paragraph. The most basic question that you have to ask is simply, why is this paragraph included? Like, what is added? To learn that there were rabbis that were observing a Passover Seder, okay, we know that. We already said, even if everyone's wise, you still have to observe Pesach. So what exactly were the rabbis getting at when they included this particular passage in the Haggadah? So I will share with you another very sharp insight from the Meshech Chachma, and then an idea from Rabbi Soloveitchik. So the Meshech Chachma says that the rabbis had a very deliberate purpose in including this passage. Who's the first, not the first rabbi, who is the, the first rabbi, Rabbi Eliezer. Who is this Rabbi Eliezer that we speak of? So, for those of us, Jeff in particular, we've learned the first parak of Maseches Brachos together. I don't think anybody else here learns the Maseches Brachos with me. So, Jeff, you'll recall that there is a major disagreement between two groups of people regarding how late do you have to eat the Paschal Lamb. And it's not simply just the Paschal Lamb, but it's actually all of the commandments that we do at night. How long do we have to do those commandments? So Rabbi Eliezer says you have to finish by chatzos, you have to finish by midnight, halachic midnight, not 12 a.m. And the Chachamim say, no, you can actually go all night long. You can eat the Korban Pesach all night long, you can eat your matzah and maror all night long. Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is not that way. As I just said, he says you have to finish by midnight. Okay, so what does that have to do with the fact that he's quoted over here? So let me tell you what the Meshech Chachma says. At the end of the previous paragraph, at the end of the Avadim Hayinu, so we say, V'chol ha-marbe l'saper b'tzias Mitzrayim, whoever increases in telling the story of the Exodus from Egypt, harei zeh meshubach, they should be praised. And now we talk about the fact that Rabbi Eliezer, the teacher who tells us you have to finish up by midnight, he doesn't really end his Seder at midnight. When does he go until? He goes until the morning, until he gets a knock on the door, and his students say, "No, Rebbe, it's time to daven Shachris, time to say Kriyat Shema Shel Shachris." So says the Meshech Chachma, the Baal Haggadah, the Chazal who put together this passage following the previous one, are showing us that it's true. Kol Hamar Belisaper, whoever continues with the story of the Exodus, Hareze Meshubach, they should be praised. Because Rabbi Eliezer is the one that says that the Seder has to finish by midnight. Yet he's going all night long. Oh, what does that show you? Kol Amar Belisaper, if you're able to continue in telling the story of the Exodus, even beyond the time, the halachic time frame of the Seder, Hareze Meshubach, you should be praised. So it's a demonstration of the idea that was quoted at the end of the previous paragraph. It's not just theory. It was in practice. We have rabbis who think you have to finish everything by midnight, but nonetheless, they kept going. They were so enthralled in talking about the Exodus, they kept on going well beyond the deadline. That's the point that Meshech Chacham makes in idea number 5. He writes, Uvazeh miduyak, Lashon ha-misader be-hagadah. That's why the Haggadah is so precise. When it says, V'chol ha-mar be-lesaper b'tzias Mitzrayim, perish, what does that mean? Afilu yoser min hachiyuv. If a person goes beyond what their obligation is, hareze meshubach, they should be praised. That's why the very next paragraph reads, Maseh b'Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua. Sh'Rabbi Eliezer sover she-pesach nechal ad chatzos. Rabbi Eliezer is the one that says that the Paschal lamb has to be eaten by Chatzos. Rabbi Yeshua sover kol ha-layla. It's Rabbi Yeshua's opinion that says you can go all night long. So I apologize. I said it was the Chachamim. It's really the opinion. Rabbi Yeshua says you can go all night long. We see, Shayu Mesaprim Kulam, kol ha-layla b'tzias Mitzrayim, af yoser michiyuvo, even well beyond their obligation, hareze meshubach. They should be praised. That's a very beautiful idea, and it fits really seamlessly in terms of the transition from one paragraph to the next. So that's sort of a halachic insight into the transition. And Rabbi Soloveitchik had a little bit of a different take. Rabbi Soloveitchik just said that this paragraph, one of the dimensions that we learned from this paragraph is the intensity in which we have to approach the Seder. You know, oftentimes we come to the Seder, we're very hungry, and we have our watches out, and we're ready to time, you know, how long it takes us to go from the Kiddush until Shulchan Aruch, right? Give a here the Kanedalach. Let's start serving the food. And Rabbi Soloveitchik said that these rabbis show us that the intensity in which we need to approach the Seder has to be such that we even lose all concepts of time. That our watches should not be the on the table and sort of the anchor of the Seder. Well, what time is it? Let's keep, you know, we have to keep on a time frame. We have to get the food out. We, you know, you should actually lose all sense of time. You should be so enthralled in the experience of recalling Yetzias Mitzrayim that you lose your time consciousness. And that's what is displayed in this paragraph. They were so enthralled in the recalling of the Exodus that they literally had to be told by their students, "No, Rabbi, Higiyah Zman Shel Shachar, the Higiyah Zman Kriyat Shema Shel Shachris. The time has come to say the morning prayers." And that's how lost they were in their thought of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So the truth is, it doesn't work out perfectly that way, because according to Rabbi Eliezer, and we try ideally to meet this standard, you have to finish a good portion of the Seder experience by midnight. So this year, I think midnight will be probably around 1 a.m., if I'm not mistaken. I didn't double check yet, but it's not. We have more time than just hitting 12 a.m. Probably it's around 1 a.m., give or take. But the point is, you do have to have some time consciousness, because you have to do the Seder on time. And if you don't get up to Afikomen until 3 a.m., so you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah correctly, according to Rabbi Eliezer. So I don't think the Rav was suggesting that you don't stick to the proper guidelines of the Seder, but I think he was making a suggestion more globally that the experience of the night should not be anchored by your watch. And you should really lose yourself in the experience, so much so that other people have to let you know what time it is. You know, I think that there are two times a year that we pay very close attention to how many pages are left. We have it on the Haggadah, and we have it on Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur too, right? We always take how many pages are left in the Siddur. And I remember as a child always feeling very comforted because even though it looks like there are 100 pages, yeah, but 50 of them are English, so we're not going to say. So there was always like that moment of, okay, it's not so bad. The truth is, it's very unfortunate. And if a person is still looking at the pages when they're in their adult life, how many pages do you have left to go? So you're missing a lot of the significance of both Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur and the Haggadah.
Yeah,
so,
like the next day, it's always how late?
That's right, exactly. That's the way it should be. That's the way it should be. So that's the idea that the Rav sees in this paragraph, losing our time consciousness. Okay, let's move on now. One or two more insights, and then we will conclude. So let's move on now to the paragraph of Baruch Hamakom Baruch Hu. Just want to share with you one beautiful idea of the Rav, and then we'll move on to the passage of the four sons. So we say in the Haggadah, Baruch Hamakom Baruch Hu, right? Blessed is the Almighty, blessed is He, Baruch Shenasan Torah Le'amo Yisrael. Blessed is God that has given us the Torah. So this sounds very similar to the blessings of the Torah that we make on a daily basis, right? For the men in the room, also when you get called up to the Torah, we use the same language. Asher bachar banu mikol ha'amim v'nasan lanu es toraso. So we make a quasi-berchas ha-Torah. So what's the significance of the berchas ha-Torah? After all, this is the Seder night. This is not Shavuos night. So the Rav said that this reflects one of the unique dimensions to the Seder. In general, one of the questions that many grapple with is what is significance? What is the significance to the night of the Seder? After all, we have a general mitzvah to recall the Exodus. There's a daily mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, to remember the Exodus from Egypt. So what's so unique to the night of the Seder? Quantitatively, qualitatively, what's different? So the Rav actually has a number of differences that he outlined. One of the ones that I'm particularly fond of that's being referenced here in Baruch Hamakom is that the Rav understood that one of the dimensions of the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is that we have to include high-level Talmud Torah in the Seder experience. For the general mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, of recalling the Exodus, so as long as we make a general reference to the Exodus, we have fulfilled our obligation. But the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim demands that we delve into it, demands that we see this as an opportunity for high-level Torah study. And in fact, the Baal Haggadah, Chazal, when they created this text, really have done that for us. A little bit later on the Haggadah, we will take four or five psukim from the book of Deuteronomy, from Sefer Devarim, and we really parse out each and every phrase of those psukim, right? Vayotzienu melame this and melame that, and we learn this and we learn that from each and every word. What that is engaging in the text through the prism of Talmud Torah, through in-depth, high-level learning. So again, I say that when we run through the Haggadah just to get through it so that we can be up to the meal, we're losing that dimension of the depth of the Talmud Torah. And the Rav suggested that's why there's a quasi-berchas ha-Torah, that's why there is a quasi-blessing over the Torah that is placed in the beginning of Maggid, because it's a reminder to us that this is an experience of Talmud Torah, of learning Torah, and that's encapsulated in Baruch Shenasan Torah Le'amo Yisrael Baruch Hu. Okay. The last idea that I'll share with you this morning relates to the four children, the four sons. There's a lot to be said regarding the four sons. What I would like to do is to try to understand why we have it in for the Rasha. What exactly is it that tips us off that one son is acting in a wicked way? I show you here the four different verses in the Torah that allude to the questions of the four sons, and let's try to understand what is it that tipped off the rabbis to say, oh, that verse, that is the question of a Rasha. So let's just go through it quickly. Lachem is, I'll show you why that falls short, Shandy. I know why you said that, but you'll see why it falls short. So look at the Chacham. This is from the book of Deuteronomy, Parshas Ve'aschanan. Ki yishalcha bincha machar lemor. If your son will ask you tomorrow, saying, by the way, the tomorrow harkens back to the Meshech Chachma, right? It's not about today. It's about tomorrow. Moshe is speaking to the people at the end of their travels in the desert, but the man is still falling and the be'er is still flowing, perhaps, because once Miriam died, maybe the be'er dried up. Okay, but the point is that they're being fully provided for, right? So Moshe says, the question will come, are you able to get your son to ask tomorrow? Not today. But again, that's related to the Meshech Chachma. Anyways, Ki yishalcha bincha machar lemor. If your son will ask you tomorrow, saying, Ma ha'edus v'chukim ha'mishpatim asher tziva Hashem Elokeinu eschem. What are these laws and these statutes that God has commanded eschem, you to do? Right? Shendi, eschem. You. He doesn't include himself. So if simply the word eschem is the red flag, the Chacham uses that same language. Ultimately, that's the pasuk that is attributed to the Chacham. The Rasha, Vayaki Amru Alechem Beneichem, and it will be when your sons will ask you, Mahavodazos Lechem, what is this service to you? That's the Rasha. Okay? Is it very different from the Chacham? Not really. What about the Tam, the simple son? Vayaki Shalcha Bencha Machar Lemor, again the Machar, that's actually the pasuk that we looked at. No, actually, it's not. But again, you see the word machar, tomorrow. V'hayak yishalcha bincha machar lemor, mazos, what's going on here? V'amarta ilav, v'chozek yad, hotzianu Hashem yimitzrayim yisav adim, Hashem took us out with a strong hand from Egypt. And reference the chozek yad, that's the strong hand that we talked about earlier on in the shir. And lastly, the she'enu yodei elishol, the son that does not know how to ask. The language that the Torah uses, v'higata levincha bayomahu leimor, and you should tell your son on that day, saying, bavor zeh asa Hashem li b'tzeis Mitzrayim. That's the pasuk that the Meshech Chachma used as the platform to discuss that the future events of the Passover Seder as opposed to the current Passover Seder. Fine. The bottom line is, you have four sons, four verses. What makes the Rasha so different from everybody else? What makes the Rasha so different from everybody else? So I'll share with you another Meshech Chachma, beautiful Meshech Chachma. He says as follows, that if you look at the three children, the Chacham, the Tam, and the She'enu Yodei Elishol, there is one word that appears in all three of their inquiries that does not appear by the Rasha. Can anybody tell me what word appears by the Chacham, the Tam? Interesting. But that's not what he says. Shane, you're 0 for 2. We don't want to stray. No, it's okay. So what word appears? It's such a subtle word, you probably won't even notice it. It's the word lemor. The word lemor. Look at the Chacham, right? Ki yishalcha bincha machar lemor. By the Tam, v'hayak ki yishalcha bincha machar lemor. And by the She'enu Yodei Elishol, v'higata lebincha bayom ahu lemor. So the word lemor usually means to say to others, right? The typical pasuk that starts out in many different passages in the Torah, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, say to others. The Meshech Chachma understands that in this context, the word Lemor means, and your child will ask you, saying, please respond to me, Lemor, I'm engaging you in conversation. Please say to others, meaning really, please say to me, I'm going to ask you a question, and please respond to me. When your son will ask you tomorrow, saying, meaning, say to me, answer me, dad. By the time, when the simple son will ask you, please explain to me what's going on over here. And the She'enu Yodei Elishol, even though he doesn't ask the question, we know that he's interested in having a conversation. When people ask questions with a sincere interest to know the answer, that's a very sincere question. That reflects the desire on the part of the one asking to really know the truth. Other times, people ask questions with zero interest in actually hearing an answer. They just want to get something off of their chest, right? We know in our shul, when we have speakers come, so we sometimes call on people to ask a question, and it's not really a question. It's simply a statement. I've been to other forums like this where the person who opens up the floor says, we will now take questions, not statements. Okay. Statements are not questions. So the fact that the Rashi, the language doesn't include lemur, really mean that the really tells us that the Rashi had something to get off his chest, not in a healthy way. Oftentimes it's healthy to get something off of your chest. But here it's that the Rashi had his particular stance on the issue, and he was unwilling to hear a response. That tells us that he's a Rashi. The unwillingness to hear an answer. Just your interest is simply to communicate what you think is right. That's the midah of a Rashi. And that is what the Meshech Chachma writes. And on the last page of the packet that I gave you, hisponin, one has to consider, hashebechol habanim ksev ki yishalcha bincha lemur. For all of the children, it talks about the lemur. Levad behaben harasha. Your son will say to you, he will tell you like it is. He will not express an interest in hearing from you the answer. The word lemor does not appear there, which is a request for an answer. They want to know the answer. They're looking for the answer. The Chacham is looking for an answer. He's simply scoffing. He's being cynical about the work, the service that you're doing for the Almighty. According to the Rashi, it's silliness. It's a wasted service. He's not interested in learning anything new. Because a foolish person is not interested in wisdom. The Rashi is simply looking to ask a strong question so that he will have more opportunity to be cynical and to scoff. And there is no answer. Like, what does this mean? It's worthless. Does God really hear? Does God really care? That type of question is not a sincere question. It's a statement that you throw out there in order to be able to scoff and to belittle the service of the Almighty. Lachein lo ksiv kan lo she'ela v'lo lemor. That's why, the Meshech Chachma added a dimension that I have yet to say, that's why the word she'ela is not used, as it is used by the Chacham and by the Tam, right? Ki yishalcha bincha. It's a real question. The word she'ela is not used, and the word lemor is not used as well. Because in both cases, those words imply a sincere desire to know the answer, and that's not what the Rashi is interested in. I think it's a beautiful idea, one that I hope you will choose to share at your Seder. Okay, so I don't know. Yes, Jeff. Absolutely.
Was that the insight of one rabbi, or was that a collective?
That was the insight of the Meshech Chachma, Rav Meir Simcha Devinsk. There are probably other answers to this question. I think traditionally people think that the Rashi uses the word lachem, and that's based on the language of the Haggadah. I mean, because the language of the Haggadah is ba'avur ze asali b'tzeisi mitzrayim li v'lo lo ilu hayasham lo hayinigal. I'm sorry, it's two or three lines earlier. Lachem v'lo lo. We assume that the Rashi is removing himself from the community. What is this service to you? To you and not me? I'm not interested. That again, the word lachem itself cannot be the only way we knew that he's a Rashi, because the Chacham also speaks about what is his service to you. But we assume he means himself as well. He's not excluding himself from the congregation. So this is a really beautiful insight from Meshech Chachma. Exactly, exactly, absolutely. So I'm not sure if we actually reached 10 fresh insights. Hopefully we have more than 7. And we come upon an hour now, so we will stop here. I take this opportunity to wish everybody a Chag Kosher v'Sameach, a Zisin Pesach, and a Mirtz Hashem. Next year, we'll be able to share fresh insights into the Haggadah in Yerushalayim HaBenuya. Shkayach.